nomination is going to be for every person.
Hi, how are you?
Good to see you. All right, so I guess we should probably start.
Recorders
in here. All right, so we're actually going to talk not specifically about Pesach as a holiday and the actual mitzvahs of Pesach itself, but rather the preparation of Pesach. That's the point of this class. And actually, I sent it out to some people today saying, you know, I think y'all were on that list, with a completely different title. The title was to get rid of our chametz before Pesach, to achieve perfection, to achieve greatness between now and Pesach, being a bigger theme than just talking about Passover itself. And I think that when we're talking now between Purim and Pesach, it's a very, very interesting time. And I heard Rabbi Akiva Tatz talk about this years and years and years ago. I listened to a recording of his back in the 90s. He talked about how Purim is like a catapult, that when you observe Purim properly, that it gets into your psyche to the extent that you're able to unfold, as we've learned on Purim, because we all did so much learning and growth here in our holy congregation, that it showed us our true selves. It showed us not what is in front of us, but rather what's behind the mask, which is the point of Purim, right? The things that seem to be revealed, you dig deeper and you find that there's a deeper truth. There's something much, much greater. Hey, Rich, how are you? Pull up a chair. There's something much, much greater about ourselves than we ever imagined. There's a potential that exists just behind the surface. The point of Purim is to dig behind the surface, to see the greatness that is there, that's seldom recognized as personal truth, and then to begin to identify what those things are and elevate ourselves to recognize that. Also, of course, we see that metaphorically in the Megillah. We also see it in terms of Hashem himself, that he hides himself, right? We see it in the word in Megillah's Esther. We don't have to go now through a whole chazara of what Purim was, but even in those words themselves in Megillah's Esther, it is the revealing of that which is hidden. And we understand that on Purim, that is the point. The point was for us to actually reveal the aspects of our nature and the aspects of our personality that are hidden to ourselves. If we did that properly, so now our arsenal has something totally new. Our spiritual arsenal now has abilities that we never had before. Before, we existed as person A. We came out of Purim as a completely different person, now with a completely new arsenal of weapons, spiritual weapons, because we unleashed the mask, we took it away, and now we see, okay, this is who we can become. Now I need to become this person. So post-Purim, we now are shown, so to speak, a mirror that pre-Purim we didn't see. We saw one thing, and now we see something very, very different. Pesach is a completely different experience, and so now what I want to talk about tonight is the current process, where we are now in between Purim and Pesach. We know, we see, you know, we don't have to be media gurus to listen, to see, to be in the world today, and to understand that everyone today talks about people that are enslaved, talks about refugees, talks about people that were persecuted or are persecuted or moving to something called freedom. But when the media portrays it, so talking about a very physical thing, they're talking about something that held people back to whatever extent that particular situation did. And now they want something different. They want a different physical freedom in their life. And so in the world out there in general, when you ask someone, what does it mean to be free? The answer that you always get, I once did this as an experiment at Bina. I told the girls, we went outside, we sat in the back. It was right when the high school was letting out. And I said, as an experiment, go in pairs and go ask the high school students as they're coming out, what is freedom? What is freedom in pair? They're supposed to go to random high school students, public school students. They all said the same thing. What do they say? The ability to do what you want, when you want. That's freedom. That's what they said. Every one of them. And of course, that's exactly what I knew they would say. Because the concept in modern society of what freedom really is the ability to do what you want, when you want. That's it. Judaism, has, as we know, has an extremely different viewpoint of what freedom is. It's not the ability to do what you want when you want. It's the ability to live to your personal potential and become free through work, through effort, through action. Not simply the ability to do something. That's not freedom. Sometimes having more things, more abilities, and so on and so forth could themselves be slavery. Could those things themselves be the things that are putting the bars in front of us to stop us? It's only when we recognize, utilizing the work that we did to understand what our true potential is, through Purim, through unmasking our personal realities, that then we're able to come out and say, so what is it that enables me to truly be free, personally? And the answer is going to be different in different ways for different people. What is my potential versus your potential? It's going to be different. The methodology for us as Jews, the tools that we have, that's consistent. But the way that we utilize them and the way that we harness that energy and the way that we come out on the other side of it is unique to every one of us. So when we talk about freedom and we talk about personal exodus and we talk about trying to create a newfound reality for ourselves, the truth is that what we're trying to achieve is not some cookie-cutter answer, but rather it's an extremely, extremely individualistic formula that if we utilize the tools correctly, we're going to get to the point where we're living, and so to speak, in an absolute spiritual within the confines of an amazing freedom that other people might look at on the outset and say, that's the definition of slavery. We look at it and say, that's the definition of freedom. So I think that it's very, very interesting, because when you go and you talk to college students, you go and you speak to anybody really out there in the world, and you ask them, Jews, and you ask them, what is Pesach about? What is Pesach about? So the answer that you typically get is, well, we recall and we remember something that happened over 3,000 years ago, 3,300 plus years ago. We remember this event that happened. We went from slavery to freedom. And it's very nice. But like we did at the Pesach Seder the other night at the JCC, this we did a beautiful, all the Kol rabbis got together, did a beautiful Seder at the JCC for the JWRP program. And one of the experiments went over to someone there, a child, and said, why do we eat matzah on Pesach? Knowing what the answer was going to be. Right? Because the child's going to tell us the reason why we eat matzah on Pesach is why? Because we didn't have time for the bread to rise. And we have to remember what happened back in the days of Egypt. And that's true on a very simplistic level. For a 6-year-old, a 10-year-old, it's true. And it's true for an adult as well. But as adults, we have to delve much, much, much deeper and try to ask ourselves the question, if the point between now and Pesach, every Jew, every observant Jew, even remotely observant Jews, are busy between now and Pesach, ridding their homes of chametz, trying to figure out where it could be, where's that sandwich that they lost, where's the Cheerios that rolled from the baby under the couch, whatever it is, we're busying ourselves with this work. But really, as adults, we have to understand that it's not just about the physical, we're moving ourselves. We have a mitzvah from the Torah that tells us to go out, rid yourself, and don't eat chametz during Pesach, search out the chametz, and we know what we're supposed to do with it. Every Pesach, the Torah tells us, you go out, you search it out, you destroy it. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But the work that we're supposed to be doing right now is searching it out of our house and preparing our lives to live without chametz. It's not an easy thing to do physically. It's even a harder thing to do spiritually. Rav Eliyahu Dessler talks about the idea of free will. In Mikhtav Meliyahu, he writes this, that the idea of free will is that a person has challenges in this world. A person has a challenge, and when they're dealing with the challenge, when that challenge is something that is in the forefront of their mind, or it's something that they have to deal with, it, they don't know, can I beat this challenge, can I not beat this challenge? It's a challenge for them. So then it's within their realm of free will. It's part of their opportunity to make a free will decision. He calls different points within that barometer the Bechira point, the point at which you're still It's within the point that you're still making choices. It's nothing that's too easy for you to say. You know what? I'm at the point in my Judaism. You know, I would never eat pork. I would never eat a cheeseburger. I would never eat it. Okay, Baruch Hashem. One person might say that. The next person might say, you know what? I'm in the point of my life. I would never break Shabbos. It's also, you know, fantastic. Point of my life to say, I know I'd never go a day without learning for X amount of time a day. Fantastic. Whatever point we're at in our personal Judaism, right? So there is an area of free will before which that free will no longer exists because it's not a choice for us anymore. It's not a temptation for us anymore. The way that Rabbi Dessler puts it, he says, if there's no temptation, if there's no chance of a person saying, you know what, do I want the cheeseburger? If it's not a question in my life, so is it really a choice? He puts that outside of our realm of active free will and says it's only within the realm of active free will if it's actually still a choice for you, on the bottom or at the top. Whichever side, then this is a whole discussion of itself, what this means, how this is applicable. So I've coined the term mitzvahmeter. I've never heard anyone else say this word, but I think I coined it. Mitzvahmeter. What I call mitzvahmeter is it within the realm of something that I have a choice about, or is it so far beyond anything I'm doing right now that I'm not even thinking about those things, or it's so simple to me that I'm past it already. It's not even a choice. I would never do X, Y, and Z, but for sure, within here is a choice. Over here, I'm just not there yet. We all have a mitzvahmeter. The question is, where's the dial? And growth comes when the mitzvahmeter continues to move to the point that there's more and more and more that I wouldn't do. And by the way, it's in that area that we become more angelic. It's in the area where we have less free will, ironically, where it is not the fact. It is not a choice. It is something that is so ingrained within us that I would never in a million years do X, Y, and Z. So I have less free will, and thereby it becomes part and parcel of my very being. And that's an incredibly powerful area. What does this have to do with this time of year? So I once heard a beautiful idea when I was in Eretz Yisrael, and I taking classes here and there from Rabbi Akiva Tatz. So he said a beautiful idea. He said, when you're searching for chametz in your house, really what you should be doing every day that you're doing another room, another area, you're searching, whatever it is that you're doing, your car, right, your office, your desk. So have a piece of paper, these days maybe it's on your iPhone, and write something about yourself that you don't like about yourself. Take an aspect of your personality that is troublesome, something that's within that as we're calling it, the mitzvahmeter, right? It's still something you can measure. It's still something that you're fighting with. We all have this because we're human. And as a result of having areas of struggle, whether it's areas of my personality, whether it's anger, whether it's disputes with other people, whether it's family members that I haven't spoken with, whether it's whatever it is, I can write it down, I can put it in a piece of paper, and I can search it out. But he said it like this. He said, don't just put it down. Take each thing then and go back and try to explore it and blow it up. Make it big. That's what chametz is. What is chametz? We're searching for chametz. Chametz is that which gets bigger, not smaller. It gets bigger once you start. It just gets bigger until you stop the process. That's why when we make matzah, we stop it before 18 minutes. If it gets 1 second past 18 minutes, there's a difference between matzah and bread is 1 second. The second it gets past that point in time, right, all of a sudden, you have a problem. It starts to grow. It starts to grow, and until you bake it, right, the potential is still there for growth. You want to make sure that the things in our life that have gotten big, that have gotten out of control, the aspects of our character that need improvement, so we have to define them. That's the first step. Once we've defined them, again, how have we defined them? Because we just came out of Purim. At the end of Purim, so hopefully, there was a realization. That which was hidden, Megillas Esther, that which is hidden becomes revealed. Right? The words themselves. That which is hidden becomes revealed. It's an amazing thing when you start to think about how, in God's wisdom, the year is such and created that every holiday is a very definitive prescription for incredible growth. Because it brings us out of this very deep and powerful holiday called Purim, where we identified the areas, maybe, hopefully, and if not, now's the chance to go back and start to think about. So what did I learn about myself? What did I learn about God? How is God more revealed in the world to me now than he was before Purim? And how am I going to actualize that? How am I going to apply that to my mitzvahometer and make my mitzvahometer start to move? How am I going to move myself? If I'm not moving, what am I doing? And so this time of year, where we're searching our souls for chametz, those are we're searching our homes for chametz, we're searching our souls for chametz. And really, it's that chametz that defines where I am and what I can become, what my potential really is, because I can see the issues clear in front of me, and then be able to define them, and then be able to work on them, and then be able to so on and so forth, be able to eventually destroy them, which we'll get to in just a few minutes. There is a old Yerushalmi custom to, I've never seen this actually, but maybe some of you have, to throw kernels and nuts at grooms at a chasna. Have you ever seen this? You've seen it? Never seen it, but heard about it. So there's a story about a certain Jew who was, after his chasna, after his wedding, he was checking his pockets, you know, and everything, and he said, I'm clear, I'm good to go. He goes to his in-law's house for Pesach, sits down at the table, and he notices that his father-in-law has got some stuff coming out of his jacket, and it's falling, and the soup is falling on the table. And the guy goes berserk. He goes out and he speaks to his wife and he says, your father's got the stuff and it's from the chasna and he didn't check his coat and who knows what's up with the soup, and you know, and starts going crazy. So according to the story, this Jew goes to the Rav and says, what do I do? Should I eat in his house? He says, you know what you should do? You should be concerned about your chametz. That's what you should do. Everyone's so concerned about everyone else's chametz that they forget that they've got their own chametz. And of course, this is figurative, right? We're all so concerned, right? I'm speaking to myself. I'm so concerned about your chametz and your issues in life and look what this guy's got and this guy's got and this. I'm so concerned about everyone else's issues. And look how strange this person is and that person is, the other person. I'm so my mind is so occupied with everyone else in the world and what I think their problems are, but I forget that I've got problems. I've got big problems. And my big problems are my chametz. And, right? So ultimately, we come to Pesach and everyone becomes so religious, right? We do become, thank God, it's a good thing, it's a beautiful thing. We become very, very religious, more so usually than other times of the year, many people, right? And really the focus, while those things are important, then it's important to check and it's important to be careful and it's extremely important. But it's equally important, if not maybe more important to look inside and try to figure out what is my chametz, to identify these things, and then figure out, so what am I going to do about it? And if I'm not doing anything about it, if I just identified the things, then what's next? Why am I doing it? Why am I searching? If I'm not putting any real attention to it and real change, what am I doing? B, once I do it and once I actually identify certain key things, so then I've got to figure out how to live a more chametz-free existence. So I said a few minutes ago that the prescription, that every holiday is really a prescription. So Pesach is a prescription. The prescription of Pesach is to be able to live with myself as a chametz-free individual. Now this is a different perspective. I got to tell you, I didn't grow up religious, personally. I grew up Jewish, and we did, but I didn't grow up very religious. For me, Passover was the do's and the don'ts. Don't eat bread, don't do this, do that, do it. Seder, it wasn't much of a Seder, but whatever, right? Certain things to do and certain things not to do. It wasn't until I discovered later, later in life, as I was already in college, and it was later that I discovered that Pesach really is not just about the do's and the don'ts. It's about trying to become a different person. This actually was one of the things that was a major change event for me in my personal Jewish growth. Because I realized that if Passover, if Pesach, has a power to it. It has an energy to it. It has an ability to help me become a different human being. If that prescription is there for Pesach, for 1 week out of the year, and of course, what is a prescription supposed to do? A prescription is supposed to, you take the medicine, it's supposed to help you forever. It's not supposed to just, you know, hopefully, it's not, as long as it's not a chronic illness. And if it's a chronic illness, so sometimes you have to keep taking the medicine, right? Or you go to physical therapy, you deal with whatever the issue, the underlying issue is that you're trying to deal with. In the spiritual world, we have to do the same thing. We need spiritual medicine, right? But we have to take the pill. So there's a student, I have a student who tells me, he's actually a prisoner. I go and see him every week. And he tells me, this is true, he tells me, I don't take medicine. He's been telling me this for years, I don't take medicine. For the past 2 years, he's been in the same prison, I visit him, he says, I don't take medicine. Happens to be about a month ago, he broke his arm. So I went to see him, and he's sitting there with a cast. And I can look at him, I can tell he's in pain. I said, did you take medicine? She said, nope. You know, it doesn't make you a great person that you're in pain, right? Like, you understand that there's nothing wrong with feeling better. He says, I don't take medicine. I'm tougher than medicine. I don't need it. Now, okay, right? I think he's nuts. But I told him, I said, sometimes, we need a prescription in order to allow us to heal, even if the prescription is only covering a cosmetic issue. In other words, sometimes you need a prescription to dull the pain or to lower inflammation so that something else can get healed. And of course, this was dealing directly with an issue he was having in his life. Right? It happened to be an anger management issue with him. I said, you know, if you don't recognize that you have an issue, if you don't begin to take the medicine, if you don't begin to identify what is it that is wrong, and now what are some steps I can take to fix it? If you're not willing to take that step, then guess what? You're never going to heal. You think you're so macho you don't want to take medicine? You think you're so macho that you're stronger than the pain? You know what you are? You're a weakling. So he looked at me and he said, are you telling me that you think that this, the fact that I'm not taking medicine, I said, you know what I'm telling you? I'm telling you that it's the same symptom. The same reason why you don't want to take the medicine because you think you're so macho is the same reason why you get so angry. Because you think you have to be better. You think you have to, we went into it. But every issue in life is like this. Is that if we recognize that whether it's an addiction, which by the way does not have to be a drug, it can be anything. It can be books, it can be computer, it could be, God forbid, things on the computer that we shouldn't be looking at. It could be a phone, it could be anything, right? Today, you could be addicted to anything. And the truth is that I have seen, personally, that this represents, I think, more of what I would call the real chametz of today's society, is that people have placed and are slaves to the very things that they don't want to admit that they go to for their own mental escape. And it can be anything, you can fill in the blank. It doesn't make a difference what it is. Whether it's any type of media, right? I'll give you a very practical example. When I'm leading Israel trips, I have a policy that I've had this policy for 3 years. And I should have had it for the past 10 years, I've had it for 3 years. The policy is that when you're out of the bus, you have to be unplugged. Now, why do I have to institute such a rule? I institute this rule before we leave the trip from America to Israel. When I'm leading buses to Israel. At the orientation, I tell them this. That when you're off the bus, during any hour of programming, including lunch or breakfast, you're unplugged. And they don't understand it. What are we talking about? Why? Why would you dictate to us when we can put earplugs? Because that's the rule. Why? Because if I didn't have the rule, at least 50 to 75%, and that's probably a low number, between 50 and 75% of the trip on a beautiful hike in the middle of the Golan will be listening to something in their ears. Instead of talking to each other, instead of exploring and learning and thinking and talking about, you know, what am I witnessing? Why are we here? Why is this land special? What, instead of processing, they're, so I don't care what they do on the bus, I don't care what they do in their rooms, I don't care what they do in free time, but during program hours, you're unplugged. I'm going to tell you, this is the hardest thing for some people. And you can see them struggling with it. And some of them cheat. They put one around here, they put a Bluetooth earpiece in one ear and hang the thing back so I don't see. I mean, I'm not a policeman. I'm not going to start talking to them about it. I make the rule once. As long as it doesn't become a big problem and they're sitting there, you know, jamming when I want them to be listening, I don't say anything. But it's a phenomenon. Well, I don't think this is, it's not only that issue. It's anything. What I have found is that today people substitute, it's replacement theology. We have substituted other things for life, for living, for trying to, whether it's computer, television, music, it doesn't make a difference. You pick your poison, it doesn't make any difference. And I'm not saying that everything is bad and horrible and whatever. I'm saying that when a person utilizes X instead of spending time with their children, spending time with their friends, learning, trying to become better people, it takes away, it becomes chametz, it becomes the thing that's replacing the potential for your mitzvah to move. And this time of year is about examining where in my life do I do this? We all do it. I do it. We all do it. There's no one in the world who doesn't do this. Right? There was an advertisement in the Hamudia Jewish newspaper about a year and a half, 2 years ago now. It's a big advertisement of a family. I think it was the Hamudia. It might have been Yatet. I don't remember which one or both. Of a family sitting at a table with the father and the wife both on the phone. You remember this ad? Both, one of them was like this, one of them was like this, and the kids were sitting there playing on something else, right? So it was a meal time, saying, no, we always have dinner together. Yeah, this is what it looks like, right? It's so pervasive, right? I'm not saying I'm not guilty. Many times I get calls all the time, and so sometimes I'm sitting there also, but it's a problem. It's a big problem. I don't mean to pick on this one thing, but it's an illustration where in modern times, right, this isn't something, an ancient concept. This is a modern concept. This is happening today. This is our life. And I think that as we're trying to identify what it is that pushes us, that drives us, that we desire, why do I want to spend my time doing X, Y, and Z? Why do I find it enjoyable? Why is it that I am like this in my personality, whether it's anger, whether it's addiction, whether it's, you pick whatever the issue is in a person's life. And I think that ultimately this is something that if we start to work on now, so we come to Pesach and it can transform our Pesach. I had a class, I guess it was about a month ago, also at that same prison. So it was about freedom. Now when you're talking to 15 to 20 prisoners about freedom, it's a very real thing. Like, this is not a theoretical conversation. Right? It was a series I was giving there, and these are not Jews, but they love to hear Jewish philosophy. And my job is to come and just give them ideas and help, self-help, basically self-help group. So I start talking to them. That subject was about freedom. And it's basically this concept, this idea. I even told them, you know, a couple months we're talking about Passover and freedom. So I asked them, what does it mean to you? Now, when you ask a prisoner, what does it mean to you to be free? What do you think they're going to say? Be out of here. I want out of this place. I want to be out of this place. This is a military prison, so it's a little bit unique, but it's a prison nonetheless. And you know, their idea of freedom is to get out of this building. Get me out of this building. And I know what they go through on a daily basis. I know their daily routine. I know what happens when they have to go to solitary confinement. I know what happens as I visit them there, right? And when you talk to them and you ask them, what does freedom mean to you? It means getting out of this place. That's it. So I told them, I said, what if we could change that definition and make it much, much deeper? What if what you wanted was not just to get out of this place, right? When the Jews were in Mitzrayim 3,300 plus years ago, so before all of this happened, they were in Egypt, before the process really began in earnest, the Jewish people were in Egyptian society, and Chazal say that they were they were mixed up, for the most part, in a large extent, mixed up into Egyptian society, which was horrible, horrific. You know, we often talk about the fact that we have matzah, right? The child that says, we have matzah because we didn't have time for the bread to rise. So we say that we went out of Egypt, b'chipazon, which we, Hashem says, get out, go. We don't wait. Get out of here, right? There's two perspectives as to what that means. What is this fast? What is this get out in a rush thing? There's two ways to look at it, right? One way is to say that the Jewish people had gotten so involved and so part and parcel of Egyptian society, they'd gotten so low that if they would have stayed in Egypt one more second, they would have fallen to the floor, they would not be able to be saved, would not have been able to be redeemed. And that would be it. They would have been finished. They wouldn't have been able to do what the divine plan was. Hashem had to take them out right that second. That's one viewpoint. There's another viewpoint. Other viewpoint is that through the process, the hundreds of years they were there, and then ultimately through the Makos, and then witnessing the Makos Bechoros, and then going through the process of seeing everything, right? Choshech, going through this process of unbelievable power, right? Of seeing Moshe, and seeing Aaron, and going through this incredible process of the ten plagues. Coming out the other side, they had reached and grown to such an unbelievable level with such incredible magnitude that Hashem said, if you stay in Egypt one more second, so that your neshamas, individually and collectively, are going to leap from the physical world. I'm not going to be able to give you the Torah. I'm not going to be able to sustain you as a spirit, as a physical and spiritual nation, the way that I want to bring you out and give you the Torah. Get out of Egypt. We have to move you out. We have to put you into a new dimension, a different thing. We have to take you out of this place. And right, these are two opposing. They're both true. That's the amazing thing, is that they're both true. On different levels, they're both true. Which I don't have time to go into them now. Exactly how that is, why that is, mystically, they're both true. They weren't forged yet as a nation. They didn't even their individualism was even forged. They didn't know what it meant to be really Jewish. They didn't have it inside. But they had achieved incredible heights. In such a short period of time, it was unbelievable, miraculous what they achieved. Both were true simultaneously. How that is again a different discussion. But what they achieved and what they were able to do was come to the point where God said, now is the time, you're ready for redemption. Again, personally, nationally, for the ones that made it out. Some didn't make it out. It's different, also a different class, different discussion as to why. But the people that made it out were ready for the redemption. Now that was miraculous to a certain extent. There were miracles that occurred. They had no control over those miracles. They had no control over the way that this, right? And it was done with unbelievable chutzpah. What was the chutzpah? That they shechted the God of Egypt. Right there in front of them. One of the gods of Egypt, right there, right? The night of the Pesach. We all know this. We're not beginners in Judaism. We all understand what I'm talking about. They the chutzpah. Hashem says, this is what you're gonna do. You're gonna go ahead and you're gonna put the lamb's blood right there on the doorpost for everybody to see. No, we're not ashamed of who we are. And right then and there the Jewish people began to understand. Again, I'm talking individually, I'm talking about as a nation. There was a forging that was happening. If we are growing, if we are trying to move from point A to point B in our lives, and you have to define what point A is, and you have to define what point B is. But if you're trying to move from point A to point B, then yes, Yetzias Mitzrayim was miraculous. But today, we don't depend on miracles for personal growth. We have to have belief in Hashem. We have to understand there's something greater than ourselves, but we don't depend on miracles. We have to work at it. We have to put in our incredible effort to define what those things are that are plagues. What are our makos? What are my makos? What are the things that are plaguing my life and causing me to have chametz? When I define what those things are, and then I begin slowly to destroy them, I search them out. I said it at the Seder the night. We live in a military town, right? This is the ultimate seek and destroy mission. This is the ultimate seek and destroy mission, right? You think an aircraft carrier has it? This is the ultimate seek and destroy mission. Where the Torah commands us, God commands us, seek out your chametz, seek out the stuff about you that you need to improve in your life. And then what do we do? It's a divine commitment. Destroy it. So back to what Rabbi Tat said, the suggestion that he made, to actually, as you're searching for the chum, is to write down the personality traits. You take it a step further. Once you've written it down, once I've spent the time examining those things, then once I've spent the time to work on them and make steps, here are my action steps I'm going to take for each of these things to improve my life, to make my life better, then what do you think we do with the list? You burn the heck out of it. That's right. You burn it. You destroy it. You obliterate it in front of your eyes. You watch the very stuff that has plagued your life and has caused you strife and has caused you pain. You watch the personality that you hate about yourself, as we all should have aspects of our personality we don't like about ourselves, and you watch it burn. What a therapeutic act. Right? If my father-in-law was here, he'd probably say, whoa, I got to go give that to my patients. You know? What a therapeutic act. To take, and this is divine wisdom. This is what it means to act out the Torah, to live the Torah, to take a mitzvah and make it real. To take a command and bring it inside and then make an action, do an action that makes the mitzvahs, that moves that mitzvahmeter a little bit more so that those challenges and those things that we had are no longer challenges. They're no longer problems. They're slowly becoming aspects of my life that I've mastered, and I'm becoming a different human being. I'm becoming a different Jew. I'm deserving the personal yetziah. I'm deserving the personal redemption. Where we come to the Seder night and suddenly there's a new reality to what I'm achieving. This is the prescription that we come to when we come to Pesach. Because now for a week we can live without our chametz. Not just living without physical chametz. We're living without our spiritual chametz. We're living our life for 1 week without those things. You can even take one day of each one and assign different aspects of those things that were on that sheet to each day of Pesach if you want. But if Pesach becomes a prescription where you can live without these things, and we can become a different person for a week, then the prescription has the potential to transfer to the rest of the year. So then to begin counting after Pesach, through the Omer, up to Shavuos, and then you deserve to come up to the mountain and become someone who can really receive the Torah. Right? That's after the redemption. This is hard. This is not easy. This is hard. Life is hard. Truly, living as a Jew is not easy. Living as a human being is not easy. But if you live it by utilizing the prescriptions we're given, it's even harder, but it's worth it. It's worth it. Because if we try to identify and heal ourselves, so to speak, of our chametz without the prescription, we just dig ourselves into deeper holes. Every step we can take to try and create for ourselves a new reality is literally going to make the mission more successful. The seek and destroy mission is exactly that in terms of what we're trying to achieve with our personality. It's exactly reflected in halacha that a person is supposed to search out their homes and then destroy what they find. So our job before Pesach, this time of year between Purim and Pesach, is to search out the aspects of our soul that need to be searched. To identify then the things. Can you imagine? Think about it from a military perspective. If you search out the problems in a specific area, But you don't identify the targets. So then you can't destroy the targets. You're going in blind. This is the work of this time of year. This is the work preceding Pesach. You can't wait till Pesach to do it. Because that's living it. You're supposed to live it then. The time is now. The time is now to identify, to seek it out. Right? Identify it, destroy it, and then live without it. And if we can do that, then Pesach suddenly becomes a time of absolute freedom. You've moved the mitzvahmeter, right? You've taken your free will and moved it. You become more angelic. Your potential becomes much, much more. You become to the point where you deserve. We talk about every year, you see people wearing kittel on Erev Pesach, the night of the Seder, the Seders. You wear a kittel. Why? Because you want to appear and try to put yourself in a mindset to be the type of person that's close to Hashem as possible. Try to look, dress in white, look like an angelic being. But really, really, the way to get there, the way to move our personal mitzvahmeter so that we have less and less choice in our life, is by identifying the things that are stopping us from that growth, searching it out, destroying it, and then living without it for Pesach. So this is the idea that I really wanted to share. And I think that if we're successful at doing this, then we experience the freedom. Then what we're going to be doing is experiencing a personal redemption. That's what it means to be personally redeemed. Personally redeemed, because I can be a happier person. I could be a person full of life, but my potential is so limited as long as the chametz is weighing me down. And if we're able to do it, of course, the more people that do it, the more powerful our potential is for national redemption, and the more potential it is for Mashiach to come faster and faster and faster. So Mr. Shem will be able to do this, be successful at it, and have a successful time leading up to Pesach, and live the prescription to its fullest during Pesach.
Yeah. How did he say the thing?